Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It was another positive week for U.S. equities and bonds too, as the year-end rally continues. This is happening despite political risks around the world, from Europe to South Korea, and back to the U.S. with respect to fiscal policy uncertainty. Now joining us today to discuss this all as part of the CIO Strategy Snapshot, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, nice to be back with you here on the podcast. Thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning to begin another trading week. Welcome back.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday and happy holidays. I know it's a little bit early, but it's just around the corner.
So, Jason, let's begin with the November payrolls report, which we received this past Friday. What's your assessment of the state of the labor market as it stands today?
Well, the data was mixed, but largely in line with expectations. So the non-farm payroll growth for November was 227,000. The consensus expectation was 220, so almost bang in line with the expectations. The prior 2 months, September and October, they were collectively revised 56,000 higher. Less good news was the unemployment rate increased slightly from 4.15% to 4.25%, so about a tenth of a percent. Some of that is due to shifting kind of labor force participation, and also it's based on a household survey, a different survey versus the payroll growth, and there's a little bit more weakness evident in the household survey. In addition, average hourly earnings rose 0.4% month over month. Year over year, it's still around 4%. It's a little hotter than expected, but kind of generally still in line with the overall trends. If I were to bottom line, I'd say the takeaway is that the labor market remains on solid footing. It is continuing to cool, and that's really been the story, all year. But at the moment, we're seeing hiring is sort of moderating. Firing is also very low. It's a little bit of a holding pattern, waiting for kind of more clarity on the state of the economy, more clarity on what the Fed does. But overall, in line with expectations and kind of a consistent story that we've seen for many months now about a good labor market, one that is also cooling.
So, Jason, based on the labor data, what the state of the U.S. labor market looks like, what does that mean for the chances of a Fed rate cut next week?
Well, it certainly increases the chances. If you look at market pricing for the probability of a 25 basis point rate cut at the meeting next week, it's now an 85% chance of a cut. 2 weeks ago, it was only a 55% chance. So it's a pretty sizable increase from a coin toss to now someone that is quite likely. The only data point between now and then that could really alter the Fed is the Fed's actions or decision is the November CPI data that we get on the 11th. The consensus forecast for both headline and core CPI is to kind of basically remain unchanged on a year-over-year basis at 2.7% and 3.3%, and between 25 and 30 basis points kind of on a month-over-month basis. So again, sort of in line with very gradual disinflation, certainly possible there could be an upside surprise, and if inflation runs much hotter than that, if there's a big upside surprise, that certainly can alter the Fed's plans. But one thing that's kind of noticeable, in addition to inflation that have moderated over the past year or two, is that inflation surprises relative to these consensus expectations have also moderated, meaning you're not seeing inflation coming in at 0.5 when the forecast was 0.3 on a month-over-month basis. It might miss by a few basis points. As a result, the market impact should be relatively muted because if the market sort of gets what's expected should be kind of reflected in market pricing, and therefore the overall market response to inflation data should be somewhat muted. And you can actually look at the options market to see what is it essentially implying for a price move in the S&P 500 up or down after the data is released on that day. And what it is right now is about a 50 basis point move plus or minus for the S&P 500 on the 11th when the data comes out on Wednesday. That's the smallest such implied move in about 3 years. So what it means is that as long as inflation is sort of roughly in the ballpark of expectations, and the past year suggests it will be, then the market's going to kind of shrug it off. It ends up being somewhat uneventful, and therefore the Fed's kind of path to cutting 25 basis points is all clear. Last week before the jobs data came out, there were multiple Fed officials, including Chair Powell, who were speaking. They could have pushed back more clearly on what the market was expecting to sort of set the market up for the likelihood of no cuts. Instead, they were kind of reiterating that we're data dependent. Well, the labor market data certainly gives them reason to continue the cuts. And my assumption, I think the market's assumption, is that the inflation data will as well. So assuming the Fed delivers the 25 basis point cut, the market reaction on the 18th should be relatively muted, unless there's real big surprises with what the Fed does in terms of its 2025 economic projections, that changes its growth or inflation outlook, or more significantly, if the dot plot for rate cuts next year, which is right now it's 4, if that changes significantly, it's a good chance it gets, you know, pared back to about 3 instead of a median number. But if it falls to 2, for example, that could certainly sort of spook the markets because it's then be more hawkish than the markets are currently expecting. So it's more likely what the Fed says about next year that could move the markets when they meet, rather than actually not cutting 25 basis points, which looks certainly not a done deal, but we're quite likely at this point in time.
Now, if we turn to the political risks I had mentioned up at the start, they span from France to Germany, South Korea, and even here in the U.S. to a lesser degree. Yet, as you point out in your latest blog, title is What Risks, the markets seem to be shrugging them off. Now, is this due to complacency or perhaps something else?
Well, let's just kind of, you know, think about what's happened in the markets the past few weeks. 2 weeks ago, President-elect Trump tweeted out that he, you know, could apply 25% tariffs on all imports from Canada and Mexico. The next day, the S&P 500 rose 57 basis points. So he kind of shrugged that off. In the past month, we've seen the German coalition government collapse, and now there's a snap election on February 23rd. The French government collapsed last week after a no-confidence vote. It's unclear how this will exactly play out. Yet the Euro Stoxx 50 index is up 3% since the end of October and 5% just in the past couple weeks. Uneven Korean equities are down only 1% last week, despite the various political turmoil that's going on there. So why is the market kind of shrugging this off? Well, one, they could just be, you know, kind of making a mistake. They're not kind of pricing in proper risk premiums. But there are also some fundamental justifications for the way the market's behaving. One is that such events that, you know, I've alluded to have not really clearly altered the trajectory for, you know, these economies in 2025 or even beyond. You know, the threat of tariffs are not actual tariffs. You know, and post-election policy changes in 2025 will take time to have an impact. And they need not be negative for growth and inflation. And that applies to the U.S., but also to what could happen in Germany post-election, whatever sort of comes out of what's happening in France. So, you know, right now, a lot of political noise, not necessarily changing of the economic outlook. And then a second sort of fundamental factor why the markets could be somewhat different to this, or at least appear complacent, is that, you know, U.S. assets dominate global financial markets, and the U.S. economy is the best position to withstand these policy risks. Even if there's higher tariffs, the U.S. in some ways less impacted by them than other markets could be. One thing that seems to be pretty clear within the U.S., but even hearing from colleagues around the world, talking to investors in Europe, London, and in Asia, is that investors everywhere seem to agree with the idea of sort of U.S. exceptionalism in terms of better, you know, economic outlook, more, you know, predictability and stability, better market outlook, or at least conviction in that market outlook. So there could be a bit of a, you know, quote-unquote sort of flight to safety bit for U.S. equities and bonds that could be supporting this kind of grind higher. So if the U.S. is holding up because it's somewhat immune, even if there's other risks around the world, for the overall, you know, market backdrop, and actually, you know, could be somewhat insensitive to what's playing out. That doesn't mean that, you know, this is the right approach, but this is how the markets, and you can sort of justify some of what the markets are behaving and doing at this point in time, given a lot of political uncertainty around the globe.
So, Jason, reading further through your blog, you also argue that the market is no longer pricing in for reflation in the U.S. What do you mean by that?
Well, so reflation is another way of describing the Trump trade. So the idea is that when you have, you know, President Trump getting elected, but also a red sweep, that the, you know, the replay or potential replay of 2016 is that you will get policies that lead to both higher growth but also higher inflation. And on the day after the election, November 6th, that's what you saw. You saw interest rates go higher by quite a bit, you know, close to 20 basis points across the curve. Inflation expectations went up significantly. The dollar rallied. Equities were up a lot, but led by more cyclical parts of the market, like whether it's financials, small cap stocks. If you look at market pricing from November, the close of November 6th onward, though, the markets aren't pricing for reflation anymore, or the Trump trade. They're pricing for what I would just say is more along the lines of disinflationary growth. You know, well, if you look at the rates market, the 10-year yield is down 27 basis points since the 6th, and more than half of that, 15 basis points, is led by falling inflation expectations. The S&P 500 is up 2.7% since that day, but it's been led by the Magnificent Seven. They're up 6%. Large cap growth stocks, heavily skewed towards the Mag Seven, are outperforming large cap value stocks by 5%. And the Russell 2000 small cap index is up less than 1%. So the equity rotation that you would expect in reflation, that's not occurring. And just in the past week or so, we've also seen AI related stocks, baskets of different AI kind of exposure have also come rallying back quite a bit. And then in the last 2 weeks, where much of this disinflationary growth trade has taken place, you've also seen the US dollar down 1.4%. So it's a little bit surprising this is happening. It's also occurred at a time when, by and large, U.S. economic data has been surprising to the upside. And the Atlanta Fed's tracking estimate for fourth quarter GDP has gone up from 3.3%, or it's now at 3.3%, up from 2.4% at the start of this period about a month ago. So better growth, seems to be less concerned about inflation. Market's doing well, but it's not sort of for the reasons that necessarily you would have thought in a red sweep outcome. It suggests perhaps less worry about inflation risk from Trump policies. And there could also be other factors. It could just, again, be real optimism about the overall state of the U.S. economy. But it is interesting that it's a little bit maybe of also complacency on inflation risk and what the markets are pricing are not necessarily the theme that was clearly evident on the day after the election.
So, Jason, as we begin to close out, what does this all mean for the market outlook as we begin to close out 2024 with only a few weeks remaining?
Well, with risks either not materializing or investors not paying much attention to them, the path of least resistance is for the market rally to continue. If we get in-line inflation data this week and the Fed cutting 25 basis points next week, that doesn't guarantee this rally continuing because those should be largely priced in. But generally, absent negative news flow or any real news flow and a lot of volatility, upward momentum in the market tends to be self-reinforcing, supported by investors kind of chasing the rally. What it does mean is that if this keeps going, we could either sort of overshoot the fundamentals at some point in Q1, and it sets up the markets for a correction in Q1. If the data or policy fall short of expectations and the margin for error becomes smaller, the more stretched you become, the more any sort of negative news and the more sensitive the market becomes to any sort of disappointment on that front. And this could be what the Trump administration's policy sequencing and priorities could be more negative for growth and inflation than investors assume. So from day one, they could be announcing significant tariff increases in a way that the markets perhaps are assuming a more cautious or gradual sort of introduction of these tariffs. That's one possibility. But even if the fiscal policy is relatively benign, inflation on its own could surprise to the upside. Growth may not moderate. Market expectations for rate cuts, instead of pricing in 2.5 to 3 for next year, it could actually end up being whittled down to as low as 1. That could cause rates to go higher. This scenario right now, the market's not kind of pricing for. That ultimately still is kind of more early in the year, sort of potential correction and pullback after really strong performance in 2024 and kind of ending the year and looks like a high note. But overall, if we take a 12-month perspective, we think there are more to go to equities, but it won't be a smooth path. It'll be bumpy before we get to we think will be the price target of 6,600 on the S&P 12 months from now. As I noted, tech stocks and AI have actually done well in the past couple of weeks. You're seeing sort of a sign of that sort of theme resuming after being kind of drifting sideways for a few months. So that's something that we kind of continue to like. And then on fixed income, the recommendation we have is to still kind of focus on the intermediate or the belly part of the curve. You're looking at 5-year duration, 5 to 7 years to maturity overall, with the idea that if growth is stays elevated, if inflation doesn't come down, there's certainly a real risk that rates could go higher. And if they back up, the more interest rate risk you take in the longer duration, the more you're exposed to that. So rather than taking a lot of interest rate risk, we expect you or recommend you to position for a lower rate, but by positioning by only taking a modest amount of incremental duration around the intermediate part of the curve, it's staying up in quality. If equities could correct in Q1, so could riskier credit as well. That's probably a better reentry point, but that's the outlook right now.
Well, Jason, as always, a very productive and insightful conversation. Thank you for spending some time this morning with our listeners and our clients to keep them current on CIO's market views, as well as guidance when it comes to asset allocation. And do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you, Jason. You as well. Again, today we've been joined by Jason Draho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Again, I would like to point you, our listeners, our clients, to Jason's latest blog. A title is What Risks, which is now available up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, simply reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of Jason's latest blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.